Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for a rivalry radio exclusive. It's the Flip Side with Mike and Rick. The Flip Side with Mike and Rich. It's game time, Mike and Rich. So do your thing.
Oh, you better believe it. You're listening to the Flip Side with Mike and Rich on Rivalry Sports Entertainment Network. It's a little early today, 5:30, but we're ready to go. The NBA draft this past weekend, baseball season, the MLB season's continuing. You know, things are going on in the NFL as we speak. And where would you like to start, Rich?
I want to start with the NFL. Let's talk about this Derek Carr contract thing and see what you think about it. Did you hear that Derek Carr signed a new deal? If you haven't, you've been living under a rock, Mike.
Oh, of course. Derek Carr got his contract. He deserved it. You know what? I thought he was the MVP of the league last year, to be honest with you. Like, he was tremendous. He was great. And you could tell the difference in the Oakland Raiders. When he was on the field and when he was off the field, they turned into an absolute disaster. So, you know, with that, they don't really have much of a defense. And, you know, their weapons are obviously, you know, without their star quarterback, obviously Derek Carr was the heart and soul of that team. And he was obviously their leader. And when he went down, you know, the wheels just fell right off. It's not like they were a good enough team to just kind of, you know, they were just good. They were good. I mean, a big part of that was Derek Carr. And I think he deserved to get that kind of contract.
So he signs a 5-year, $125 million deal with the Oakland Raiders. And he will get an okay amount of money guaranteed. I don't know if you've been in the particulars of the contract, but I want to get your thoughts really quick, and we'll get into the particulars of his contract. Do you think that this deal affects Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins?
Well, it shouldn't based off of performance, but it does because of it's the highest paid quarterback is whoever's up next. That's pretty much – it's all about timing when it comes to the quarterbacks and when they're being – it's when you're being re-signed. If you are the next guy up, you're probably going to be the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL. That's just kind of the way it is. I think Derek Carr deserves it. I don't think – I mean, Kirk Cousins obviously is not Derek Carr, nor close to Derek Carr. But if we want to say that, you know, Kirk Cousins is going to get – when he gets – paid by the Washington Redskins, he is going to get paid. He deserves to get paid, but obviously, if you want to go based off of play, then I would tell you that Kirk Cousins deserves to get paid, not as much as Derek Carr, but he deserves to get his money.
All right, so I think that Kirk Cousins is just as important to the Washington Redskins as Derek Carr is to the Oakland Raiders. Just my opinion. I don't even see how you can compare them. Honestly, I mean, Derek Carr's he was great last year. He had 28 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, right? Not blow you out of the water numbers by any means, honestly. He only passed for a little over 3,900 yards. So, you know, those aren't stats that necessarily blow you out of the water. So I don't get where you say that Carr is head and shoulders above Cousins.
Well, Derek Carr is a winner, and Kirk Cousins is, well, you know, not. He hasn't proven anything, really. Cousins has proven to be he's proven to be like a lesser version of Romo. He's like the kind of guy who will get you to that spot, and then he'll throw a big interception late in the fourth quarter in a big game. So Kirk Cousins needs to, you know, he's that kind of guy who will dazzle you with stats. I want to see him make the big throws when it matters the most to get them over the hump. I don't see him being that guy right now. I think he needs to prove that.
All right. Well, David Carr hasn't really made any big throws to get him over the hump either.
Derek Carr also got hurt. They were a top team in the AFC going into the playoffs, but then when he got hurt, they went from being a top team in the AFC, a team that could possibly compete with the Patriots, to being, well, you know, the worst team in the postseason. So that's a significant jump. Obviously, Kirk Cousins means a lot. A quarterback means a lot to an organization. But I see Derek Carr as a guy who can get the Oakland Raiders to the next level, even without that top-notch defense, because of the Oakland Raiders' performance last year. They were that much better with Derek Carr, and they looked to be a team that could possibly compete for the AFC and to come out of the AFC. And then when he got hurt, they were significantly worse. What do you think, David?
Bring David on really quick. You there, David?
Yeah, I'm here. So, right, I mean, man. I'm kind of in the same boat. I think, you know, Rich, you and I were talking about it the other day. I think the logistics of this contract, it's kind of like the Donovan McNabb contract. There's not a lot. I mean, there's still a lot of guaranteed money there, but there is a loophole for Oakland. Do I think it impacts? I think it more impacts. I think it puts more pressure on the Redskins to get the deal done. I don't think it necessarily impacts his deal. The team that, you know, you got to look out for, though, you know, Matt Stafford, Ryan's deal's coming up soon. I mean, these guys, especially Stafford, I mean, they lost Ndamukong Suh to free agency because they didn't want to pay the franchise tag. You know, Stafford's making $16 million a season. And I would definitely say Stafford's better than Carr. You know, he's got Drew Brees' deals coming up. You know, and then we got the future MVP of Sam Bradford. His deal's coming up, too. I think it impacts a lot of the players around the league. You know what's really getting frustrating, though, is these deals, it's been going on for years, but these deals, like Joe Flacco, before Flacco even did anything, you know, these guys getting these big contracts, and each one they're one-upping the next, yeah. Besides these elite players, I don't understand why they have to match the next person. It just doesn't make sense. Like, they get paid before they actually start doing something.
I agree. No, that's the way it is now. I can't stand that. The thing is that with Kirk Cousins deserves his money. I think he's a top 15 quarterback in the league. So I think he deserves to get paid. I think he deserves for the Redskins to show him the money, like to actually show him that they're buying into what they're seeing and they think that he can be the guy. Just some faith, you know, some security. So, I mean, he's obviously their franchise quarterback, so he should get paid like their franchise quarterback. I still don't think that he should be. Obviously, he's going to wind up making around the same money as Derek Carr did because of one upping everybody. Everybody wants to one up because of the fact that you want to show your franchise quarterback that you mean as much to me as any of these other franchise quarterbacks do. And if they're not going to get that kind of money, they're going to try to go elsewhere. So that's part of the reason why they do that. It's all about.
Yeah, let me break down this contract for you, though, a little bit here for Derek Carr and tell you why this doesn't necessarily impact the situation with the Washington Redskins and Kirk Cousins. All right, so 5 years, a little over $125 million. He got a $12.5 million signing bonus, but guaranteed is only $40 million guaranteed. That is a pretty low number in my opinion. If he plays out his complete contract, his total guarantees will be around $70 million. But just guaranteed at signing is $40 million, which is pretty low. Kirk Cousins is not going to sign a contract like this. It is too low. He's set to make $25 million this year and set to make $28 to $34 million next year, depending on what the Redskins do if he doesn't sign a long-term deal. And it could go up even further than that because we all know free agency, the free agency market drives up the price of quarterbacks. So somebody could guarantee Kirk Cousins $100 million next year in free agency. I think that in order to sign Kirk Cousins, they probably will be, the parameters will probably be pretty close to the same, 5 years, $125 million or so. But I think they're going to have to get in the range of $70 to $80 million guaranteed at signing. At signing, $70 to $80 million guaranteed. So that's why this is a pretty good deal for the Raiders. They have some outs. If Derek Carr doesn't perform over the next couple years or he gets injured, they can let him go, and they're only out $40 million. But I don't think Cousins is going to sign for anything less than $70 to $80 million guaranteed.
So you think that Cousins deserves more money than Derek Carr is what you're saying
to
me right now?
No. I'm not necessarily saying that. This is what I'm saying. Kirk Cousins is making $23 million, $24 million this year. He could potentially make $34 million next year. Just his next year's salary alone is only $7 million less than what Derek Carr signed guaranteed. Just his next year's salary alone is about $6 million less than what Derek Carr signed for his contract. So that's why I'm saying Kirk Cousins is not going to sign for less than $70 or $80 million guaranteed. Because he can just keep signing these tenders that the Washington Redskins hand him.
He's made $40 million
over the past 2 years already.
I think it's more about security. I think it's more about the years. I think it's more about the – like I don't know. I think – oh, boy. No, because you're making it seem like Derek Carr is getting like a raw deal here. As compared to Kirk Cousins, I don't know. $70 to $80 million guaranteed for Kirk Cousins, really? I don't know about that.
That's what it's going to be. But that's what it's got to be. Well, he's going to get it somewhere.
He's going to get $70 to $80 million guaranteed somewhere right now?
Absolutely. If you don't think so, you're out of your mind.
So my challenge to you, Rich, was who would sign him? Who would sign him for that other than the Redskins?
Name a list of Kirk Cousins statistically was top three or four quarterbacks in the league last year. As far as statistics, who's not going to sign him if you need
a
quarterback?
Where'd the Redskins wind up?
Redskins had a horrible defense. Redskins had a
mediocre.
Horrible defense last year.
Kirk Cousins was statistically, yes, I would agree with you. Statistically, I agree. I don't agree that he's the guy moving forward. I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's a great quarterback. He's not proven that. So $70 to $80 million guaranteed for a guy who hasn't proven much, I'm not going there. Sorry.
Drew Brees threw for 5,000 yards last year. What did his team do?
Yes.
Would you say he's a great quarterback? I know he's won a Super Bowl, but I will take a 5,000-yard quarterback any day.
Drew Brees' teams are absolutely god-awful, and I mean like they're atrocious. And I'm no Drew Brees supporter, trust me on that. I'm not the biggest Drew Brees guy, but I'm just saying that, you know what, Drew Brees' teams are absolutely god-awful. If you look around that whole team, outside of what do they have? They had Brandon Cooks the last few years. They've had absolutely zero on that team. The Redskins are much better. The Redskins have been much better than the Saints have been, and I don't think that's close. That shouldn't even be argued.
The Redskins, that's what it's going to take.
Not that bad.
Yeah, that's what it's going to take. This, I'm just if you don't think somebody's going to guarantee him that money, especially if he has a season like he did last year and passes for close to 5,000 yards again and has double touchdown versus interception ratio, somebody's going to sign him. Somebody's going to guarantee him that money.
Derek Carr was in the conversation for MVP and he took $40 million. So what are we talking about?
Derek Carr's at the end of his rookie deal. He was only going to make about $1 million or something this season if they didn't sign him to an extension. So this is a good deal for Derek Carr. For Kirk Cousins, on the other hand, I'm telling you, if you look at last year's salary plus this year's salary plus what he could get as a franchise tag, either exclusive franchise tag or non-exclusive franchise tag, if you just take those 3 years together, the money has to mean something, right?
Into Cousins being the guy that can get the Washington Redskins back to the Super Bowl.
Who else is it going to be right now?
I don't know. I mean, I
right?
I can tell
he's
you.
He's the best option out there. If he was a free agent, he'd be the best free agent on the market, hands down, this year or next year.
What was that?
If he was a free agent, he'd be the best. He'd be the most coveted free agent out there.
He's a top 15 quarterback in all of football. I agree. I'm not arguing that. He absolutely – he's a top-end quarterback. Obviously, if he went onto the market as a free agent, he would be the top guy out there because there aren't many, top high-end quarterbacks out there on the free agent market.
I'm just saying, look at the money. Last year he made $20 million. This year he's set to make $24 million. Those 2 years together are more than what Carr's contract is guaranteed for. He could just keep on signing these tenders and keep making money hand over fist. You add in $30 million next year, and then you blow this contract out of the water. So why would he accept any less?
But the thing you're forgetting, Rich, he keeps tendering franchise tags. So the Redskins haven't gone long term with him. That in itself, I think, decreases his market value, and the fact that they won't give him a long term contract. They've done it for 2 years, more than likely a third year. Maybe they get the deal done. I think they've pissed him off to the point where he doesn't sign a long term deal with the Redskins. The only reason why he's making that much is because they don't want to invest long-term in him. That's the only reason.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you think about all the hoopla just a few years back with RG3.
And that
he was the
gamble. The Redskins took a gamble with Kirk Cousins, and they lost. Because he's outperformed what anybody thought that he would do in the front office. These past few years, he has. He just outperformed, and he's got to get paid like that top tier quarterback in order for him to sign. Because he's going to get it somewhere else. He is. The Redskins are going to have to buy him out of the free agent market. And in the free agent market, my opinion is that somebody's going to give him $70, $80, $90 million guaranteed.
So, Rich.
You think about it, though. I mean, you're going to need a backup in San Diego. Because Philip Rivers isn't going to be around much longer. You got Roethlisberger that's been debating if he's going to come back each year. If he landed with one of those teams, I mean, I see your point, Rich. They would pay him.
Because teams are desperate for a good quarterback, which is pretty much why that's it. And to me, I think that's ridiculous because, all right, I would think franchise quarterbacks and all they're getting paid is ruining the NFL. They're ruining the NFL. Why? Because of the fact that everybody is dumping all of their money on these quarterbacks and they're not putting any of their money into the defense, into the offensive line, into what protects the quarterback. And look at a lot of these teams with where they're dumping all their money on the franchise quarterback. Are they winning? They're winning. They're not winning Super Bowls. Look at the Packers. They put everything, into Aaron Rodgers, and they have nothing else. Oh, and look at Drew Brees with the Saints. They, you know, a lot of these teams are dumping all of their money into the quarterback because they need that quarterback. And you know what? They're not the defense, offensive line, and quarterback play wins Super Bowls. And they're not going to be able to do any of that if they just dump all their money into a quarterback and, you know, not think about ever. Not, I mean, obviously they're thinking about everything else, but I mean, a lot of these team salaries are going into the quarterback, which is affecting everything else.
No, I hear what you're saying, but you don't have to be like this. I'm looking at this Derek Carr deal right now. Okay, the cap hit this year is $40 million, which is insane. That is just crazy. Okay, but next year it goes down to $25 million. And then it goes down to $7.5, $5 million, and $2.5 million. So it does affect short-term, the first year or two of the contract, but in year three, four, five, the number really goes down as far as cap space used. So, dead cap space used.
So, Rich, how good is Kirk Cousins, in your opinion? How good is he?
You know, statistically, he's top five. The last 2 years, he's finished top five in the league as far as completion percentage, yards per completion, yards per attempt. I mean, they're all up there. So statistically, he's top five, right? I don't know how you can argue that. I do agree with you on one thing. He does have to show that he can win as well. He does have to show that he can take the Redskins to the next level. But in this day and age, for the statistics for the past couple seasons that he's done, he's going to get paid before that. That's just the way it is. Or if he signs the $34 million franchise tag next year, I mean, you're looking at over $100 million guaranteed on his next contract, just because of the franchise tenders that he's signing. Somebody's going to pay him.
So somebody's going to pay him the most money out of any player in football.
Yes, he's the next quarterback. You said it yourself. The next quarterback is the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Yes, somebody is going to make Kirk Cousins the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. And he's going to set the bar for all the other quarterbacks as well.
Let's move on. I can't talk about this anymore. Let's move on. What else? Yeah. What else on the plate here?
Do you talk to hey, I just want to note right now that this is the first time since the flip side with Mike and Rich has started that I've left Mike speechless. I just want to note that right here, right now. It's 5:53 p.m. on June 26, 2017, and Mike is speechless.
All right. Let's move on.
All right. So, real quick, you know, we can round out the NFL a little more. I think bring it back down to earth. Really just both of your opinions, you know, we're just a little bit away from training camps really getting going in the NFL. Who do you guys feel had the best off season so far in the NFL?
Go ahead, Mike.
Ooh. I like the Buccaneers because of the fact that, you know, adding DeSean Jackson, you know, they got the tight end they needed. Jameis Winston, he has to be elated right now. I'm gonna say, like, they might not have had the best offseason, but they're probably my favorite team to move, like, you know, move up significantly from where they were last year. I think they're a playoff team this coming year. I think Jameis Winston, with all the weapons he has around him now, I think that offense is gonna be so much fun to watch. And I think that they got a steal, an absolute steal in the draft. So I think that's my favorite offseason so far. What about you, Rich?
You know, I thought that Mike was going to say his New York Giants. I really, really did. Honestly, I'd probably have to go there. I mean, you can't argue with what they did in the offseason. Just adding Brandon Marshall made Eli a lot better. You're talking about Jameis Winston licking his chops with DeSean Jackson. Imagine, you know, Eli having a big receiver to throw to in that offense and being more comfortable with a second-year head coach. I think just that signing alone, honestly, for the Giants, as far as the offseason goes, won it for them.
I think the Giants still have a lot of work to do on the offensive line because I think that's where they need to work on that. They don't have much on the offensive line. Hell, I always say their left tackle, Eric Flowers, has been seen pushing guys into Eli before. So I think that absolutely needs to be addressed. But, yeah, I enjoy what the Giants have done. I just don't think they've had the best offseason.
Yeah, they locked up Jason Pierre-Paul as well. He proved that he can play football without a couple of fingers on one hand. And three fingers. They re-signed Keenan Robinson and they picked up some pretty valuable players in the on the defensive side of the ball as well. So for pretty good deals. They're not breaking the bank or anything like they did last season on the defense, but they've picked up some pretty solid role players, if you will.
We want to talk about the Patriots have had a great offseason too. So let's just say I love the signing of Brandon Cooks. You know, it's funny how they just continue getting better when they were already the best team in the league. And they just get better and better and better. Bill Belichick's a genius. That team is gonna win multiple Super Bowls for the next two or three years. I think they win two of the next three Super Bowls. I'm not gonna lie. I think the Patriots are that good.
Yeah, Mike. So I think you hit the nail on the head. That actually was my pick. Was New England. You know, just looking at what they did in the off season. You know, the thing I don't understand. excuse me. That you already know how good New England is. Why anybody would make a trade with them? I mean, they were able to pull off two trades. They pulled off multiple, but there are two big trades, you know, getting Dwayne Allen from the Indianapolis Colts and Brandon Cook from New Orleans. Like, that in itself was just unbelievable. And then they added Andrew Hopkins, you know, another weapon, speed weapon for Brady to throw to. Like you said, Mike, every year they just keep getting better and better, and it's unbelievable. They don't rebuild, they reload. And they just won the Super Bowl last year.
I don't know what else to do. They have Gronk, they have Edelman, they have Brady, they have a defense that has – I mean, every year they're good. They might not be the flashiest, they might not be that shutdown defense every year, but last year – They were the best team. I think they were like the lowest points against all year, and people weren't thinking about that. People think about Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski and what they have. It doesn't matter. They can lose guys, and they don't skip a beat. And you know what? Like you said, why do teams trade with the Patriots? You know you're going to get hosed every time. You're going to wind up looking like a clown every time because of how smart these guys are. The Patriots are going to make you look stupid when you're deal every time.
Yeah. And the guys they let go as well. I mean, you don't even need to pick them up. You can just, you know, toss them on the woodpile. They're done. The people who they let go is just as impressive. The list of people they let go is just as impressive as the list of people they sign and make fit into their system. They just let star players walk and don't even blink an eye about it because they know that they have somebody else in their system that's going to step up. And they seem to get rid of these players at the exact right time when their careers are getting ready to start to decline. Their Italian evaluators are the best in the league.
They get the best out of everybody, every single player on that roster. You bring them on, you put them on the field, they are going to – it's funny because you either play or you're done. It's kind of like, you know how a lot of these coaches, they hold on to guys because it's like, you know, he's been loyal. He's like, he's this, he's that. I like him. I mean, he'll turn you around. If you don't play up to their standard, you're gone. Like, that's just the way it is. Bill Belichick has no issue with just being like, all right. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, that running, I mean, what was his name? That running back. Nobody will ever hear from him again. But he had one great game against the Colts. I think he put up like 250 yards in his first game. And then, like, I think he missed a meeting or practice the next day. And he never played for the Patriots again. People were like, where did he go? Like, why would they do that? It's because Bill Belichick holds them to the standard that you're supposed to be held to. If you are missing, if you miss something, you're done. You have to be on point with everything that you do, and you have to be able. They hold you standard that you just, you know, if you don't live up to that, they have no problem letting you loose.
Yeah, that's right. Like I said, it's impressive. I think it's more impressive the people that they let walk versus the people that they sign. And you mentioned Gronk. Is he even really a factor anymore, to be honest with you? Like, he gets injured every single year. When he's on the field, you're not going to find a better tight end, in my opinion. But is he worth the headache? Is he worth being on the roster, getting paid, and playing six games in a season?
Well, with Gronkowski, they're the best. They might be the best offense in the league. I mean, with Gronkowski, I've always said he is the biggest mismatch in football. And he's the most dominant offensive force when healthy in the entire league because of the fact that he plays a tight end position. And who do you put on him? Do you put an outside linebacker on him? He's faster, he's more athletic than you. Or do you put a cornerback on him where he's just that much bigger than you? He is so physical. He's a big bruiser, and he can catch and he can run. So it's like he's so good. When he's healthy, I think he's worth it. But I mean, to the Patriots, if he gets hurt, you know, another time or two, they're going to let him go too. And they're not going to skip a beat because that's just – the Patriots have lost Tom Brady for games at a time, and they just don't skip – it just doesn't matter. It does not matter. This is why me and the, you know, the whole Brady debate thing where I talk about Brady's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I don't think he is that. Because of the fact that if you were to take him off of the Patriots, they still win. They might not win the Super Bowl, but they would make the playoffs every year. Why? Because Bill Belichick just kind of plugs guys in, and they tend to play well. It's just the Patriots are just a winning organization, no matter what they do. They tend to come out on top.
Yeah, they do. They do. Hey, David, what's our next topic, man? We got anything, any more NFL stuff we want to talk about?
No, I mean, I think that's good for today. Why don't you guys pick your poison? We can go just the NBA recap or MLB.
We can do the NBA.
We got this big three thing I want to talk about too. No, go ahead. We can do NBA as well, and then we got this big three thing that I'd like to talk about as well that starts tonight. But go ahead, Mike. What are your thoughts on the NBA draft? Anything stood out to you?
I mean, nothing that was too, you know, insane. I think that, you know, obviously the top two was what was expected. Markel Fultz to the Sixers, and, you know, Lonzo Ball as, you know, the foregone conclusion. I kept telling you guys that everybody was like, oh, he might drop. He's not going to drop. Lonzo Ball was going to be an L.A. Laker. That was going to happen at the end of the day. And, I mean, if anything, De'Aaron Fox at 5
actually might be the biggest steal in the draft, or one of the biggest steals in the draft at 5, because he has the potential to be the best player in this draft. I mean, outside, he can do everything. He's more athletic than pretty much everybody in this draft, and his weakness is 3-point shooting, which is something that you can always work on. I like De'Aaron Fox. I think that's a great pickup at 5. And, I mean, let's just say Malik Monk at 11 was another really good pickup. I like those guys from Kentucky. And let me just say, this is the first time in NBA history that the first 5 picks in the draft were all one-and-dones, all freshmen.
All of them. You're right. Every single one of them. So they may, are they ready for the NBA right now?
We'll see.
Some of them will be, and some of them won't be, right? Okay. We talked about that a little bit last last week as well, as far as the one and done thing. You know, they should. A lot of these guys probably should have a little bit more college time, but that's the way the system's set up. So they're going to take advantage of it.
Is Zach Collins is another one? He's the first Gonzaga one-and-done player in their history. It's funny because he wasn't even a starter last year. He was coming off the bench for pretty much most of that year, but he was still the best player on that team. So it was just a weird – like, he was – him and Nigel Williams-Boss were the two best players on that team. But Zach Collins is the most NBA-ready because of how, you know, he's a seven-footer. He's freakishly athletic. He can – you know, his shot – they showed something on ESPN that it's almost impossible to block his shot. His shot has never been blocked before. He can actually shoot the three. I think he was like 46% from three last year. He's a great shot blocker. It's whether or not he can get used to starting every single day for an NBA team, and it's going to take some time. I think he's a project. But I think that he will be one of the best centers in the entire league.
Yeah, it's hard to find. It's hard to find good big men. So, may have been. Huh?
No, I was going to say, what do you guys think?
No, I agree. I agree with that as well. You know, the draft, there were really no surprises to me at all. The biggest surprise, honestly, is the no team in the East, I don't think, you know, the top 4 or 5 teams, it doesn't seem like anybody really got any better for the draft, during the draft. As many trades as we've talked about and stuff like that, nobody's really pulled the trigger on anything yet. So as it stands right now, you know, the top teams in the East are still, you know, right there, and Cleveland hasn't gotten any better yet. I know that they're trying to add a piece there, but they haven't really gotten any better yet. And everybody's talking about getting Paul George. So it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up. If a team below the Cavaliers, you know, say the Wizards, or I don't think the Celtics are necessarily in running, but one of those two get Paul George, do you think that elevates them to be able to push for the Eastern Conference champions?
Well, out of the draft, by the way, out of the draft, Boston picked Jason Tatum out of Duke. I like that pick a lot. I mean, he was a superstar in college. There was no I at 3. I think Boston does get better with that. So
yeah,
that
it might not be
another.
It might not be as quick though. I mean, it does take a little bit of time. There are very few players coming out of college that come in and just blow the doors off the league. You know, it takes a little while to get adjusted. I'm not saying for the long term that it didn't get better. I'm just saying, like, immediately. Is he really going to make a huge impact in what they do on the floor next season?
Even if he comes off the bench, I think that, you know, he doesn't necessarily need to play 40 minutes a game. If he comes off the bench and plays well, that helps the Celtics. I mean, I don't know about it being a significant jump, but, I mean, that'll – and that I think he'll have an impact next year. An impact. It might not be a huge impact, but it'll be an impact.
Right.
I think that.
No, I agree there. I really think it's the, you know, wherever Paul George signs, that's kind of my big thing. I'm waiting to see where he lands.
That's the big thing. I don't think that.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And if one of these teams sign him, you know, one of the top eight teams in the league from last year, if one of them end up, in the Eastern Conference, if one of those teams end up signing Paul George, does it make them competitive with the Cleveland Cavaliers? Just say top five. The last few teams are about 500 teams anyway, and I don't know that elevates that team that much. But you know, say the Wizards or the Celtics land Paul George, does that automatically make them contenders in the East?
Yes, absolutely. That that's a top 15, top. I don't know about it. I'm trying to think about a top 10, top 15 player. Paul George is incredible. Like he's a game changer. Like if you get him, if either the Wizards or Celtics get him, that would be an incredible series to watch. I think that they could beat the Cavaliers if they were to get Paul George. But you know
you still have to go against the Warriors.
What was that?
But then you still have to go against the Warriors.
Yeah, no. The Warriors are gonna as long as they keep that team. They're gonna win the championship for the next 4 or 5 years. Like I just don't see, as long as they keep that team intact, I don't see anybody beating them for a long time. Which is kind of sad to think about for the NBA, because it's just like, does anybody have a chance to beat this team? It's almost like, oh yeah, you know, the defending champs, but we're gonna go out and we're gonna beat them next year. And you think you're looking at them, and you're like, do we really have a chance? Does anybody have a chance? Does the second best team in the league have a chance against the Warriors? That is a sad question to ask.
Here could be the second best team. I mean, this is a realistic possibility. Say the Cavs land George. Say the Cavs land George. I mean, it really could go the same scenario could go with LA also. But say they land George, and then Carmelo next year decides, you know what, I've already made my money. Now I'm actually going to go get a ring. And Carmelo signs with the Cavs. Again, same thing could go with L.A. They're going to have over $60 million in cap space. So they could essentially sign James and George and add a Melo at a reduced price, even in L.A. But imagine having the Kyrie, George the LeBron and Carmelo team. The only thing I worry is you don't have enough touches because Kyrie loves to hold that ball, and you already got LeBron, and we already know Carmelo's the gunner. But I mean that could be a team that could go against Golden State.
I agree. If that happens, I don't know if it will, because obviously Cleveland doesn't really have much money. They have to make a big time trade, I hope they can pull it off. But I don't. I mean, they're gonna do something. I just don't know what. I don't know if they can. They can compete with the Warriors. I don't see them getting past six games in a series. I think Melo could, if they can make it work, maybe. But like you said, with the touches. You got three guys who want to be alphas, and like Carmelo Anthony has never, let's just say, it never seems like Carmelo has exactly wanted to be the best team player in the world. So to me, he wants to be the guy, and in order to make that work, he has to take, you know, a seat. He has to take a step back. And do you really think Carmelo Anthony is going to do that at this point in his career? I don't think so.
Yeah, me either. Hey, let's talk about the NBA awards happen tonight. We're finally going to figure out who the MVP is, if we don't already know.
Russell.
Russell Westbrook.
Even though he doesn't deserve it.
You can still make a case, for a couple other players there as well. But Russell, you know, I think hands down he's going to get it. That's just the way it's going to be. So we have the NBA awards tonight. We also have the Big Three Basketball League tipping off tonight for its first games. What do you think is going to draw the better ratings?
Go ahead, David.
You know, I think it'll probably be the award show, but I think the big three leagues should definitely be in there. I know I want to tune in and watch it because it's definitely intriguing, and you know, to see all these former NBA players that are making up these teams. You know, you got Iverson, that's a player coach. You know, Gary Payton's involved. There's just Jason Williams. There's just a bunch of players you know, not necessarily can handle the full court anymore, but they got the playing the half court 3-on-3. It's pretty cool. I'm excited to watch it.
The one thing, yeah, there's 3-point shots. There's also 4-point shots that can be made as well. It's gonna be pretty interesting. You know who is a player coach in this league? Charles Oakley. How old is that guy?
Well, he's old enough to swing out at a Knicks game still.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But he's a player coach as well. 4-point shots are when a player is touching any part of the 4-point circle. It's not a timed game. It's the first team to 60 wins. So they're playing. It kicks off at 8 o'clock tonight, and I think they're playing 3 or 4 games tonight. Every team plays, you know, the whole night. They travel around the country. The closest that they're going to get to me, I think, is Charlotte, and I think the closest they're going to get to David is Dallas, and they're in Brooklyn tonight. So I'm not sure how far that is from you, Mike, but that I think it's going to be pretty interesting, and I think it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I definitely think it would be interesting. You know, definitely interesting for us to keep an eye out. You know, the thing that I was thinking about with this too is this. You know, the 3-on-3 is now going to be an Olympic sport also in the next Olympics. So you know, things to watch out for. LeBron already said though that he wouldn't be part of the 3-on-3. I could see Durant doing it though. Durant loves pickup games.
This is something else too. I mean, like, I just looking over the rules, and I looked over them earlier, but I forgot about this. This is truly like pickup basketball. Halftime happens after a team scores 30 points. It goes to 60, but a team must win by 2 in order to win. So, you know, it's like a pickup basketball game. So, you know, we'll see if Ice Cube has got something going on and you know, unleashes this and the country loves it, or it, you know, if it'll just kind of fade into oblivion over the next few seasons. It'll be very interesting to see exactly what happens here as the Big Three League gets started. And I don't know, man. I think it gets a lot of hype. I'd rather watch basketball than watch an award show. That's just me. I think I'm going to record this and watch it tonight, and I probably will just figure out what happened at the NBA Awards, you know, later on, or as I get tweets and get live updates that way. So I think I'm going to watch the Big Three League tonight and just figure out what's going on with the awards as they happen. I don't need to watch that.
I definitely agree with you there. I would much rather watch a basketball game than watch an awards show. I've never been a big fan of award shows. Like, people are always like, oh, did you watch this award? Did you watch these awards? I'm like, I'll hear about it afterwards. I don't care. I don't care about watching when someone gets an award. I get really – that's not entertaining for me at all. So I would much rather watch a pickup basketball game than watch an award show of any kind. It doesn't matter what awards. I might watch Who Gets Inducted into the Hall of Fame. Maybe. That'll be about it.
Yeah,
even those
highlights.
Yep, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that even that I usually kind of wait for, unless it's a player that I've grown up watching and they're being inducted to a Hall of Fame, then I'll watch. But other than that, I'll watch the highlights. I do remember, you know, when Madden got inducted into the Hall of Fame, I do remember, you know, watching his speech as a what was he inducted as a commentator? Is he inducted twice? Is Madden inducted twice into the Hall of Fame? Or did they just take forever to induct him into the Hall of Fame? Because it just seems like that was done recently. I know we're getting off topic a little bit, but I think I remember his speech and watching that just because I wanted to see what he was going to say. So All right, we're going to move on. I'm going to give you guys the floor a little bit and talk a little bit of MLB here. But before we get into MLB, I want to get your thoughts, Mike, on Tebow Mania. Tebow Mania is sweeping the Mets organization. How long do you think it's going to be before he's called up to the Mets?
I don't care. I don't care. Low A ball. See, I am a fan of production. I'm not a fan of publicity stunts. It's not. This takes away from the game. I don't get. All right. So far in low A ball, he has 214 at bats, 47 hits, 3 home runs, 23 RBIs, and he's batting .220. There he is. He has the 8th highest batting average on his team this year. On his year. Do you think he deserved the promotion?
He's batting .222. Don't sell him short, Mike. He's batting .222. Don't sell him short.
Okay. Oh, .222. I apologize.
Yeah.
Deeply. Those extra 2 points. Those extra 2 points matter on him getting promoted. Okay, it's a publicity stunt. If he gets called up to the big leagues and he did not deserve it, I won't watch. I won't watch. I will not watch. I will refuse to watch. I won't do it because it didn't mean anything. Everybody's going to talk about it. Oh, he made it when nobody thinks he would. He made it because he was Tim Tebow. Nobody else would have ever gotten put into this position, and nobody else would have gotten promoted. Everybody else on that low A-ball team right now is rolling their eyes because they're just like, we've been working our ears off for our whole lives for this. Tim Tebow comes in and goes, all right, I'm going up. I'm heading up. See you guys. Oh, cool.
Hey,
thanks.
I'm going to have to disagree with you, Mike. I'll make a valid argument. Are you ready?
I can't wait.
All right, so players with similar numbers in the same league as Tim Tebow, okay, that had good careers. Carlos Beltran, right, batted .229 at high A Lexington. Huh? No. Jock Peterson. Let's see here. He batted .189. Mark Trumbo hit .272 in high A. Let's see here. Joey Votto, .231 in high A ball. Mike Napoli hit .232 in high A ball. Nelson Cruz batted .238 in high A ball. I mean, like, these are legitimate MLB players. I'm not saying that Tebow's going to make it there, but these are players that were called up with similar stats as Tim Tebow. So why are you saying that maybe these guys deserved it and he doesn't?
Were they really? Okay. How many home runs?
Yeah, they really
did they
were.
Hit?
I'm looking at the
how many
stats
home
right
runs
now,
did
man.
They
let's
how many
see
home
here.
Runs
I,
did they hit?
I'm looking right now. Let me see. 14 home runs for Trumbo, which is.
Yeah, okay.
Little more than the 3.
Yeah.
Who did else did I mention? You got Salvador Perez here as well. Carlos Beltran hit, what did I say? He hit .229. It does not have his homer. So I would imagine it's, they were pretty low as well. I'm looking here for home runs. Joey Votto only hit one homer before he was promoted.
So why were these guys from? Were these highly touted prospects? Because I was going to say, if they were highly touted prospects that they just tried to push up, Tim Tebow wasn't a highly touted prospect. Tim Tebow is a human publicity stunt. He wasn't even a baseball player. He didn't even play in college. The last time Tim Tebow played baseball was in, I think he played in high school. And
he did play in high school. He double-quartered.
They literally promoted him. If you are trying to tell me that they promoted him for any other reason other than the fact that his name is Tim Tebow and he plays football, I don't want to hear about it.
They
I don't want to hear
did,
about anything
just,
else.
I'm just saying the precedent's there. I mean, this is not the only player that's ever batted 222 and hit four homers and got promoted. Mike Napoli, I'm looking at his stats, 232, five homers in 43 games in 2001 for Mike Napoli.
How old were they when they
did
this?
He was 19.
They were probably like 20.
He struck out 158 times in 149 games in single-A ball and still got promoted. I mean, he still strikes out a lot today, but I'm just – like, there's players with similar stats that get promoted. That's just probably a publicity stunt. Who knows what Tim Tebow's ceiling is or not.
Probably.
It probably is. It is a publicity stunt.
100%
is that what you want to hear? It is a publicity stunt because Tim Tebow is putting butts in seats and he's making the New York the Mets organization money.
Bingo.
So people want to see him.
That's all that matters here.
Right.
He got promoted and he's going to wind up playing at least one game in the major leagues within the next 2 years. Tim Tebow is going to play whether or not he deserves it. Anything he could hit zero, he could hit one. He could hit 106 in double A, play, and they'll bring him up for one game.
No, they're not going to bring him up batting like that.
Why?
No way.
Late in the year. You don't think they'll call him up on a September call up just to get everybody at the game?
Oh,
you don't think
and not play him maybe? Just to be on the bench.
You don't think they would? You don't think they'd put him on the field for even as a defensive replacement? Just to put Tim Tebow on the field. You don't think that would happen?
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know, man. That's
you
in your
idea how many people would watch that?
A lot of people.
Everyone.
I'd watch it. Why not? Would you watch it?
Everyone would. There is not. Everybody. You could not even be a baseball fan. And you would watch that. Why? Because it's Tim Tebow. This is what I'm saying. He is going to get promoted from level to level, whether or not he deserves it. They're going to promote him. He's going to get some time in the minors, or a significant amount of time in the minors, and he will wind up putting on a Mets jersey, a Major League jersey, going out there for an inning, and it is going to be the biggest story. Oh, Tim Tebow, he did it. It's gonna be absolutely disgusting. I can't wait. I can't wait for this to wind up happening.
Hey, it's your team.
I just don't see Tebow doing it. I just don't see Tebow allowing it to happen.
You don't see him allowing it. If he gets the call up
to the major league, you don't think he's gonna go? He's absolutely going to.
I just don't think he would. I mean, he's already got the contract. He doesn't need the money. I just don't see him making that move. In the fact that he hasn't earned it, and he knows he'd be taking a spot from another player on the teams. And you know, the guy gets enough animosity and negative environment from the media and everything else from all the Tebow mania. I just don't see him doing it. I don't see him taking a spot that he hasn't earned. I just don't.
If he gets called up to the major league, I think that even if it's for one game, it's going to be something like, I think he will eventually be in a major league uniform. If it's for one game, and everybody's going to tune into that. It's going to make the Mets relevant, especially since the Mets have been so irrelevant this year, and it doesn't look...
Hey, they're on a three-game winning streak, sir.
Over the Giants, the last-place Giants, who have, like, 15 minutes. Let's relax here. They have a three-game winning streak. All right, I mean... Yeah, to be fair, if they beat the Dodgers three times in a row, we might be talking. They beat the Giants, who have like 21 wins this year. So let's step back on that. They're irrelevant.
So to jump off the Tebow bandwagon,
yeah, thanks.
I mean, you just touched on something. you know, we got a lot of teams that are looking pretty strong. You know, we're headed almost to the mid-season mark for the majors. You know, Mike, who would you say is, I don't know, the surprise for this year, and or, you know, the top team right now, if you were grading it in the National League and the American League, who are your two top teams? Not just records, straight up, who do you think are the best teams?
Which question are we going with first? Because the surprise team, to me, in the National League, has to be the Colorado Rockies. Like, they, you know, nobody expected them really to, you know, the Rockies have always been an around 500 team. You know, they're like, they're that team who has, yeah, they have pretty good hitting and they have terrible, terrible, god-awful, historically bad pitching. I mean, it's to the fact that it's gotten to the point where Ubaldo Jimenez might be the best pitcher in their history. So it's just, all right, but I mean, the Rockies have actually
Mike, I got a question for you there. Does that have to do with the ballpark they play in, though?
To an extent.
I mean, they can't be that bad. I mean, they can't be that bad. They play half their games at home. So, I mean, just things fly out of that park. Like, you could throw a baseball from home plate out of that park almost just because of the altitude. Like, they just, you know, home runs are going to happen there. It's just something that's going to happen.
There are a lot of parks that are tough to pitch in. So, obviously, Coors Field is the hardest, but you got fields like Yankee Stadium that ball flies out. You got the parks like Philly. In Philly, their park is, you know, it's a hitter-friendly ballpark. There are a lot of hitter-friendly ballparks in the league. I think it's a mix of the two. The Rockies, A, their pitchers have not been successful at all, and B, nobody wants to go there because of how, A, the Rockies really haven't had a very successful team for a long time, and B, because they don't want to – they feel like it's going to ruin their career because of their stats are going to go down. So, I don't know. I think that it's a mix of the two, and the Rockies – I mean, if anything, guys like Senzatella and Freeland and – some of these other guys, they're actually pitching pretty well at Coors Field this year. So so far, these young pitchers are actually, you know, Senzatella has pitched better Coors Field than he has on the road this year, if I'm not mistaken. I knew that was earlier on. I didn't know if that was still going. I'm pretty sure he has a lower ERA at Coors Field than he does on the road. So he's actually buying those odds right now. The Rockies are probably the best team they're the most surprising team to me. I don't see them holding up on that, but I think that they'll at least give the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, you know, runs for their money. The Arizona Diamondbacks are another team that surprised me. I mean, you expect the Diamondbacks to be they have the hitting. They needed Greinke to be that guy, and he has. He's pitched very well. He's pitching again today. And, you know, the Diamondbacks, you know, they're like, are the Diamondbacks really that good, that great? And it's like, they actually might be, but I still think the best team in the National League, to me, is the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the best team in the American League is the Houston Astros, I think, by a lot. I don't even think it's close right now. I think the American League, the Yankees have started coming back down. The Red Sox aren't as great as everybody expected them to be. And everybody else, you know, I mean, the American League Central has been, you know, the Indians have been a little bit better, but then you got like the White Sox and the Twins and all those teams that have been like, you know, they've been pretty good. And then you got the Houston Astros and everybody else.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you just go, you know, 52-25, the Astros, they have a commanding lead, above with anybody, you know, they're top team in the American League by far, you know, just looking at their record here, and the Dodgers are the same way, 51-26. If the Diamondbacks, you know, weren't in the NL West, they would be winning, you know, they'd be winning their division, in the Central or the East, You know, they're probably the second best team right now, and you know as it goes. So we did talk about. I have a question for you as well, and David, you were probably going to get into this, but the Yankees are on a slide, and the Boston Red Sox have caught them. They're right on a dead heat, tied for first place in the AL East. Do you think we talked earlier in the season as the season started and as they started to get on this hot streak, the Yankees, that they have a lot of young players, a lot of young talent, that they were probably going to come back down to earth and they weren't going to be able to sustain what they were doing. They're 2-8 in their last 10. Do you think that they've hit that downward spiral that they can't crawl back out of? Or do you think this is just a slump, a mid-season slump that happens to many teams and they're able to pull out of it?
Well, the question,
Mike, can I take that one real quick? So
go ahead.
So my thoughts on this one, I don't think they've come back down to reality. I think they're young players. I mean, the offense is still there. I mean, their offense, Judge is just continues to be a beast. Sanchez has been dynamite for them. I think the reality is it's that starting pitching. That was the thing that everyone said the Yankees, that would be their Achilles heel going into the season, would be that starting pitching. And, you know, I think it's shown. I really do. You know, having Tyler Clippard and Tanaka between the two of them, I mean, they just keep getting shelled every time they hit the field. You know, just really, really bad pitching is really what's holding them down. And kind of having them lose those games. They had the lead against the Rangers, and then the Rangers just teed off on Clippard, and they blew the lead. You know, Tanaka is a six ERA right now. You know, I really think they need to figure out how to fix that starting pitch, and I just don't know if they can do it this season.
No, I agree. I completely agree. It all comes down to their pitching staff. I mean, CC Sabathia getting hurt was huge for them, literally. And now they have a guy like Luis Sessa in there. Michael Pineda is starting to come back down to, you know, he was probably the biggest surprise for me coming into the season, because Michael Pineda hasn't performed in 5 years. So for him to come into the season and pitch as well as he was pitching, and then to start coming down like this, if you look at lately, he's been struggling the last few starts out. And, you know, I mean, if you look at that, Sabathia, Tanaka has been getting absolutely shelled. Outside of – when he is not on his game, he has been getting bombed. There is no in-between with Tanaka this year. You know, Sabathia getting hurt, Tanaka – there's, you know, Pineda starting to come back down to earth a little bit. And, I mean, Luis Sessa's in there. The only Yankee starter that you can really count on right now is Luis Severino. And that's pretty much it. You know, and then, you know, looking at their bullpen, you know, Chapman's been out for a while. He's back now. They needed Tyler Clippard to be the guy. He hasn't been... You know, he's getting up there right now. Like, I think he's a little taxed from, you know, he's had a very, you know, good run of being one of the best relief pitchers in all of baseball. And I mean, like, he was that guy that would come in the center. He was never really a closer for a long period. I don't think he was a closer for a long period of time. He was always that seventh or eighth inning guy that would come in and close the door. He was always that guy that, like, people were just kind of like, okay, Tyler Clippard. But Tyler Clippard, he was really good for a long time. I think he's a little taxed now from all his innings. I think he's pretty much – I think the Yankees need to sit him down for a while, because – and people are like, oh, do they cut Clippard? I'm like, I wouldn't cut Clippard, because they need Clippard. The thing is I think they can't run him out there every day when he's getting shelled. You need. I think that he needs at least a week off, just to chill. Now it's Chapman's back. I think they can do that. Let him just kind of chill for a while. Let him clear his head, and then trot him back out there in a week and a half, and see where they go from there. But yeah, I think that the Yankees will be fine. I think they'll still be right in the middle of, you know, the AL East race.
They did the last time they played the AL East recently, and they knocked out they beat the Red Sox 2 out of 3, and they swept the Orioles, and they, you know, that historic, like, you know, 14 runs a game they pulled off against Baltimore. So, I mean, obviously they've hit a little bit of a skid here, but I don't think it's anything that they can't, you know, it all comes down to their starting pitching. If their starting pitching continues to go downhill, the Yankees aren't going to be a playoff team. But, you know, if they start to turn that back around, if Sabathia can come back, if Pineda starts pitching like he was earlier in the year again, the Yankees will be I think that they're the best team in the AL East.
So into that, guys, you know, we obviously midseason, you know, you got trade deadline approaching. Who do you think is the buyers and sellers of this offseason or this trade deadline? And do you think the Yankees do anything with Tanaka?
What can you do with Tanaka? Well, what can you really do with Tanaka right now? What are you going to do? To me, if they were going to trade him, they can't trade him now. What are they going to get? What are they going to get from him? The guy's UCL is tearing as we speak. After every start he comes out, it is going to tear. Like, it's one of those things where he was like holding out and just trying to pitch through this, and it's tearing. Like, it's going to wind up tearing. So, to me, he's damaged goods. He's coming off of an absolutely awful year. What's he going to do for a team coming down the stretch? So I would, if anything, I would put him on the disabled list before I would trade him.
Do you think they go the Nationals route and now I'm just drawing a complete blank. Strasburg. You know, they shelved Strasburg, you know, early in his career to get this surgery done, and you know, we all know how he's come back. Do you think they've hit that point maybe at this midseason, go, you know what, let's just shelve them and we'll figure out how to piece the rest of the rotation together?
Yes, that's what I mean. Do I think they will? No. Joe Girardi is he believes in Tanaka. He wants to, he feels like Tanaka's gonna find himself. To me he looks lost. Like, there's no – and sometimes throwing a guy out there over and over again when he is in a mindset that isn't where it's supposed to be, what are you gonna accomplish? I mean, Tanaka has had really good starts here and there. Like, I think he's had starts where he's gone 7 or 8 innings of, you know, 1 run, no runs, and like, you know, 12 or 13 strikeouts. Like, he's had that start, and you'd think, okay – this is where Tanaka is going to come back. He's going to come back to being Masahiro Tanaka. And then the next start out, he gets shelled again. He is obviously not in the right mindset. He doesn't look confident. He doesn't look like he's, like, you know, it doesn't matter. Oh, last innings in the past. He's still, it doesn't look like he's there. And he's obviously hurting. I mean, I'm telling you, he's either hurt or he's just not that good. Either way, he's not helping the Yankees win. So if you're not helping the team, what else do you do? I would shelf them, and I'd get somebody else in here. Chance Adams has been, in the minor leagues, he's won like 24, 25 games the last couple of years. The guy has a minuscule ERA down in AAA. Let him come up. I mean, why not? The Yankees are trying to like hold on to this, where they're just like, you know what, he's going to turn it around. I thought that when CeCe Sabathia got hurt, that was when the Yankees were going to be like, I'm going to take action on this. We're going to bring on Chance Adams, and we're going to see if we can jumpstart and get back to what we're doing instead of trying to piece together, like, okay, you know, this kid, he might not be ready yet, but, I mean, we were willing to throw him in there for spot starts and hope to God this works, rather than let's look for a long-term solution and see what happens with Tanaka moving forward, because it obviously, what we're doing right now with him is not working.
Rich, what are your thoughts?
You know, I don't know. I've been keeping up with the Nationals. I haven't been really watching a whole lot of other baseball. Like I said, I'm a casual fan. And, you know, if you're talking buyers or sellers, the Nationals definitely have to be a buyer. You know, they're leading their division, and they're by far and away the best team in the division. But they need some bullpen help if they're going to do any damage in the playoffs, or it's just going to be like, you know, the last few years for them, and, you know, one and done in the playoffs, or winning a possibly winning a series. They definitely need bullpen help. And, you know, you mentioned a name, Tyler Clippard, and yeah, I know he's a Yankee now, but you're right. He was great here as a Washington National. And, you know, if we had somebody like that here in Washington at the level that he was while he was here, we'd be in a lot better shape. The bullpen is just rough. And, you know, you can Max Scherzer pitched almost a no-hitter. I think he had one hit, lost the game 2-1 last week when the bullpen came in. So, you know, it's just that's something that they need to shore up as well.
Yeah, no, that's the reason why I have the Dodgers winning the coming out of the National League, is because of if you look up and down the Nationals roster and look up and down the Dodgers roster, you know, they're similar. I mean, when you look at Kershaw, you look at Scherzer, you look at guys like Wood, have good rotations. And then you have, you know, their lineups are both tremendous. I mean, you look over at the Dodgers side, you have Cody Bellinger, you have Justin Turner, you have Jock Peterson, you have, their team is pretty loaded. I mean, and then you look over at the Nationals side. I think the Nationals have the best lineup in all of baseball, but the Dodgers can at least compete with that. If you look at the bullpens, the Dodgers have been very, very, very good when they have the lead in the sixth inning to the ninth. When past the sixth inning, when they have the lead, they've been winning most of their games. You look over at the Nationals side, and it's basically like sending the clowns when you're looking at the bullpen situation. So
that's right.
Yeah. In the come postseason time, this is why all these good teams are looking for bullpen help late in the year. Because if you don't have that bullpen, you can't close games out, you're going to get knocked out of the playoffs nice and early by really good teams in series. So that's why I think the Dodgers are the most complete team in the National League. And that's why they're my team coming out of the National League as of right now.
Yeah, unless the Washington Nationals pull some big trade for some bullpen help and then get another piece on top of that, honestly, because what they have right now just isn't working for them. You know, they could be up 3 or 4 runs heading into the sixth or seventh inning, and you just can't be they can't be comfortable with that. It's been pretty sad to watch. They're still 45 and 30. They still – like I said, head and shoulders above anybody else in the East, and I think that they win the East, the NL East easy, but they're going to need some help at the back end of their pitching if they want to do any damage in the playoffs at all.
Hitting can get you to the postseason, pitch staff in the bullpen to get you over the hump in the postseason if you want to do anything.
So that is correct. Here's a question. Here's a question for both of you, and Mike, I can already hear your reaction to this question.
Oh, boy.
But I'm going to ask it anyways. Are the Dodgers really that good, or are the teams they're playing in the National League not that good at all? I mean, when you look at National League versus the AL, they have 9 teams under 500. The Dodgers really, I mean, they're 3-4 against Arizona. They're 4-2 against Chicago, 6-0 against Cincinnati, 7-5 versus Colorado, 3-1 versus Miami, 2-1 versus Milwaukee, 4-0 against your Mets, 3-0 against Philly, 3-0 against Pittsburgh, 5-1 against San Diego, 4-6. They actually have a losing record against San Francisco, 4-3 against St. Louis, and then up against Rich's Nats, 1-2. So, I mean, can we really say they're that good, or is their competition just inferior in the West or in the NL?
This is every year with the Dodgers. They're really, I mean, it's the postseason where they have problems. The Dodgers are always stacked. The Dodgers are they win the division just about every year. So this is just another day in the office for the Dodgers are always loaded with talent. I mean, I could pull out the possibility that Cody Bellinger is the National League MVP right now. It's just in he missed the first 3 weeks of the season, and he has 24 home runs and 55 RBIs, and he's hitting over 270 at 21 years old. So, I mean, it's like him coming out of nowhere. Justin Turner is hitting like 400. Yasmani Grandal is a good hitting catcher. Corey Seager is probably he's like a top two shortstop in all of baseball. He's extremely young. The Dodgers have a lot. Jock Peterson, Yasiel Puig, we haven't mentioned him. They have Clayton Kershaw, who's probably the best pitcher of the decade. They have a lot of firepower. Alex Wood has come out of nowhere and he's pitched really well. So like if you look at their team, Kenley Jansen has been he's been awesome, lights out of the bullpen. They have Brandon McCarthy who has like a 3.2 ERA as of right now. Like they have been a really good team, and I don't see this being it's who they're playing. I think they have just a whole lot of talent on that team. It's whether or not they choke again in the postseason to me. That's where I'm thinking about. I mean, because the Nationals and Dodgers have been known for the last, 5 years of those talented teams that just can't get out of the first round. But
yeah.
A lot of that Dodgers has to do with Clayton Kershaw because his performance in the regular season compared to the postseason is like night and day. They're not even close. So it's whether or not he pitches well. Assuming Clayton Kershaw comes out and pitches like Clayton Kershaw, I think the Dodgers are the best team in the National League.
Yeah, I mean, they've won their last 10 in a row, and, you know, you don't win 10 games in a row if you don't have a great team. That's just my opinion, because that's just a team that's not taking any team that they're playing for granted here lately. And just to, again, reel off 10 in a row is – That's just amazing. I always fear playing the Dodgers.
I mean, the only problem with me there on that is because if you look earlier on in the season, the Texas Rangers won like 9 or 10 games in a row, and the Texas Rangers are they're okay. I don't think they're anything special. And, they won 10 games in a row earlier on in the year. I think it was 10 games. And they just played 3 really bad teams. So, to me, I mean, I don't think that's – I mean, you need to be good to win 10 in a row. But, to me, sometimes if you're playing against bad teams, if you win 10 in a row, that might not be as impressive. But to me, if I'm looking at the rosters, I'm looking at the talent on the rosters, and as of right now, I can't tell you that the Dodgers have a lot of talent on that team, and that's why I feel that they're the best team. I don't see it as, you know, if you look at other teams in the league, I don't see too many teams that are at the level that the Dodgers are, and I don't think they're going to be able to sustain it, like the Rockies. I think the Rockies' pitching comes back down to earth eventually, and I think their offense is really good. But I mean, if anything, they might be able to make a wild card spot. But I just think the Dodgers are just the better team.
We've got about 5 minutes left here today for our show. We're gonna go 90 minutes today. It is a pretty slow time in sports. We've talked a lot of the relevant stuff here, but I want to ask you guys a couple questions. I've been scrolling through a little bit of social media today, and I saw a huh?
I resent that. This is a slow time in sports. No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm a football fan. We're right in the middle. So to me, it's not a slow time in sports. But I get what you're saying.
I mean, there's only one sport going on. I mean, versus, you get into October and you have baseball, winding up, football going on, NBA getting ready to start up, NHL getting ready to start up. Comparatively, right now in the summer, it's pretty dead as far as major sports competition happens. I mean, you can always turn the TV on and find a baseball game, but that's about it this time of year. That's why I say it's fun.
I agree with that, because I was going to say, you could talk about the NBA draft. You could talk about terrible trades, like the trade between the Timberwolves
right.
and the Bulls.
Oh,
we didn't even get into that. We're going to
get
into that next week.
Because the Bulls are idiots. I'm just going to say, the Bulls are idiots. You traded Jimmy Butler for two eggs and a sack of potatoes. So we could talk about that if you guys. I mean, that we could talk about all day.
Oh, we could. Yeah, we'll have to get into that next week, I think, because we don't have enough time here in the next few minutes to talk about that for sure. For sure. Let's make that a topic of discussion for next week, and we'll put something out on Twitter and see what people think about that. But like I said, I was scrolling through social media, watched a couple of videos today, and I saw a couple that were pretty interesting, and I just want to get you guys' thoughts on it. And I'm sure that people that listen to this show are video game fans. You know, they play video games, and we probably have a few sneakerheads that listen as well. So I just want to bring up, I saw two videos of girlfriends doing stupid stuff to their boyfriends or wives and husbands. I don't know exactly what the relationship was, but saw a video today where the woman in a relationship said that her man was spending too much time on NBA 2K, so she deleted his career mode on his gaming system. What would you do if something like that happened to you guys?
Go ahead, David.
First of all, I would applaud her for knowing how to do that. That would be the first thing, because, I mean, that'd be pretty damn impressive. But, I mean, having the kids, they jump on my PlayStation all the time, so I wouldn't be surprised if one day something's deleted from there. I think back in the day, that one really would have upset me. But
yeah, like right now,
now it is what it is.
Life,
yeah, back in the – man, I remember one time I was in the Super Bowl on Madden, and it was easily one of the best games I've ever played. And yeah, one of my friends just shut it off, and he was like, "All right, time to go." And I was pretty pissed. But I don't know, man. It's definitely now in hindsight, you're just like, it's just a game, like whatever.
Yeah,
I'll build a better
team. So Mike,
you're
a little bit younger. You're a little bit younger than we are, Mike. So what are your lady. Comes
depends.
And she gets mad at you for spending time, too much time playing video games, and she deletes your career mode.
It depends on how far into it I am. If I'm like,
you've been playing it for 5 years.
Oh no, I'd be mad. I'd be mad about. I obviously, like David said, it'd be impressive, but I'd be mad because I'd be like, I've been playing this for 5 years. And I'm actually because I like when I'm into something, I want to finish it because I've actually gone that far in. I mean, I probably wouldn't have gone that far in, but if I were to make it that far in and my girlfriend deleted it, I would be very angry. I would be.
You know, when I say 5 years, I kind of meant 5 seasons. You know, it's not going to take you 5 years to play 5 seasons. But you've invested that much time into it, though. You know, I'm not into video games much anymore. I play casually. I used to play a lot. It would have bothered me back in the day, but now I just kind of laugh it off, I think. There was another video I saw too where we talk about sneakerheads, and I'm sure a lot of people that listen to the show are like that. And this guy pulled a prank on his girlfriend. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but her prank in return was getting his like $200 Jordans and cutting them up with a pair of scissors, and then just putting them back in the box. So when he opened the box and put the shoes on, they were just completely destroyed.
Girls are allowed to get mad over the little things, so can we. So I'm just going to end it at that.
that's kind of
a
big thing, though. I mean, $200 pair of shoes is nothing to scuff at there.
I don't know why you'd buy a 200 pair of shoes, but whatever.
Man, people have, I don't know, people have disposable income. Think about if you didn't have children right now, you know, and you had, and you're in the same place in your life and you're married without children, $200 for a pair of sneakers might not be that bad.
No, Rich, you don't understand. I'm just saying, I don't understand why they would only spend $200. I mean, I got my big ballers in the mail soon,
okay,
Sonny.
Okay, you got the $500 pair of sneakers.
Yeah,
I got you. You're rolling with the
Lonzo 2. Because
I'm a
big baller.
All right,
you're a big
baller. He thinks he's a big baller. He thinks
I would never own those.
I don't know, man. The purple and yellow joints are going to be hot. You have to get those.
Yeah, they're saying LeVar might be on WWE tonight.
Yes, he may make an appearance tonight on WWE Raw, LeVar Ball. So even if you're not a wrestling fan, to see exactly what the heck is going to happen there tonight, that would be pretty interesting.
Did you guys see that Foot Locker commercial for Father's Day?
Absolutely.
I'll tweet it to the Flipsides link.
Go ahead
on
and tweet
Twitter.
It out. Yeah, go ahead and tweet it out.
Yeah.
From the Flipside. Go ahead.
That great.
Yeah.
That was perfect. That was absolutely perfect. You know, you see like the other guys, they're talking about, you know, all the normal things fathers do, and then you're like, and then you got Lonzo Ball coming on saying, and then there's that time when your dad berates your coach in front of everybody. About how you can't get, how your kid is getting enough touches. Like, it was stuff like that. It's just like, that is so perfect. And it's like, oh, and then there's that day where your dad has a shouting match with Stephen A. Smith on First Take because Stephen A. doesn't, or because he thinks that you're better than the reigning league MVP. I mean, it's just like, it was just a perfect commercial. It showed a little bit of, you know, Lonzo's, you know, humor. Because, you know, so much has been about his father and, you know, and not enough about him as a player and a person. So, you know, if anything, I loved every second of that commercial.
And fishing.
All right. Yeah. It was pretty funny. So, yeah, go ahead, David, tweet that out, the Flipside, at FlipsideMR, and we'll get that out. And if you haven't seen it, you're going to have to take a look at it for sure. It's pretty funny. But that's all the time we have for this evening. It was great talking to you guys. David, thanks for putting together our topics and producing our show again. You know, appreciate all the work you do behind the scenes and may not necessarily get the credit you deserve for that, but we thank you for coming up with these topics for sure. Mike, it's always good talking with you, arguing with you a little bit. I'll see if I can leave you speechless again next week.
Always a pleasure. That's not going to happen, but always a pleasure.
All right, guys. Until next week, we will catch you on the flip side. Have a good one.
Good night.
Bye, guys.